I'm Carson Cistulli of Fangraphs.com, and this is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast, brought to you by Homestand Sports. Yes, it is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast. It is also true that I am the host, Carson Cistulli, managing editor of Fangraphs.com. With me is one of my colleagues from Fangraphs.com, the prolific, the gentle and kind, Travis Sawchuk. Travis, hello.
Hi, Carson.
I should also mention...
Great to be with you.
I should also mention your former Pirates beat reporter, Pittsburgh Tribune Review, and author of Big Data Baseball, because it seems as though those are the appropriate things to say about you.
Yes, and Big Data Baseball, of course, co-starred Russell Martin. So, Blue Jays tie-in.
That's right, and maybe less of J-Hap, whereas you always referred to him J.A. Happ. Is that right? We can get to J.A. Happ in a second, / J-Hap, but he did play for Pittsburgh while you were a newspaperman in Pittsburgh. Before we address any manner of baseball, be it the sort played by the Blue Jays or any other team in the major leagues, allow me first, both part of one of my privileges and also one of my professional obligations, to say that this program is part of Homestand Sports. It's under the umbrella of Homestand Sports. And one thing that Homestand Sports is known for is its Pitch Talks events. Travis Sawchuk, its Pitch Talks events. And it would be foolish for me not to mention the Mark Shapiro Town Hall that is approaching, or perhaps it is staying at a fixed point in the future, and we are making our way towards it. In any case, it is scheduled for Thursday, April 5th, 7 to 10 p.m. Pitch Talks, Mark Shapiro, Town Hall, an event at the Royal Cinema, 7 to 10 p.m. on April 5th, featuring, as I say, Blue Jays CEO? Does that sound appropriate? Blue Jays president? He's some manner of executive. Also featuring Ashley Dokken, a number of Blue Jays writers, and myself. We will all be there. Tickets are available, Travis Sawchuk, at homestandsports.com. That's where one can buy tickets for a very reasonable sum. Now, Travis, have you ever participated in a Pitch Talks event?
I have. Pitch Talks, Pittsburgh.
Oh, great, yes.
Yeah.
City of Bridges, City of Friendly Faces, famously known as. If you were to briefly characterize a Pitch Talks event, how would you do it?
How would I do it? it was lovely. It's a bunch of guys talking about baseball, drinking some beer. I mean, it's not just guys. This is a diverse audience.
Right. Yes. People who identify with all of the genders are invited, I think is what you really meant to say. But yes, and it is, I think it is somewhat of...
all genders
pleasant
are invited.
Atmosphere.
Yes.
There are adult beverages there if people wish to consume them. And those are all of the things, at least some of the things we can say about Pitch Talks events. Now, let us move on to a conversation about what is most pressing in terms of Blue Jays-related matters. And in particular, the reason why this program exists is to speak on a regular basis in the way we might speak of any other team. We, as Fangraphs authors, might speak of any other team, but to direct our attention specifically at the Blue Jays. I want to begin with Justin Smoak, who is not necessarily the most noteworthy Blue Jay in terms of headlines at the moment. However, I think it's a relevant topic to bring up because you, Travis Sawchuk, have recently written for Fangraphs.com one of the installments of our positional power rankings. This is essentially the way we preview the season. You wrote the first base installment, of which Justin Smoak was obviously a part. You also spoke with Justin Smoak last year on the topic of his breakout, and he seemed to have some opinions about how such a thing emerged, how such a thing developed. So I was hoping sort of commemorate your appearance in the program, to take advantage of your appearance in the program, to have you speak to Justin Smoak's breakout and how he essentially characterized it in his own words.
Yeah, it was an interesting breakout, one that happened like 7 years too late for Mariner fans and 3,000 miles away, or 4,000 kilometers, 5,000 kilometers? But yeah, it was a late career breakout. I was a little curious because Smoak didn't really follow there's been a lot of talk about launch angle and swing changers over the last couple of years. Players who are especially well positioned to take advantage of what may or may not be a juiced ball. But his batted ball profile didn't change too much last season, but his performance certainly did. He went from, in 15, he was a 91, he was a little below average offensive performance.
Mm-hmm.
And last season he had a 132 weighted runs created plus,
which is to say he hit 32% better than
league average. 32% better than league average. So yeah, it was a a remarkable turnaround. And I think a lot of people had kind of given up on Smoke being in the prospect of him being an above average hitter at that point. Even, I mean, he comes with pedigree. He was a first round pick, great college career at South Carolina, great minor league player, but things had never really gotten on track for him at the major league level consistently until last season. So I did speak with him, I think it was back in September. And I was just curious to learn more about his breakout because there wasn't like an obvious signature to it. Like, oh, he is an obvious swing changer, or he did this differently, or there wasn't a well-known adjustment.
And it should be said, right, there for some players, and you've written about a number of them, there is a little bit of a template, right? I mean, Yonder Alonso was probably one big example, but, you know, a number of other players have followed this sort of path. And then, of course, you have players like Josh Donaldson, J.D. Martinez, Daniel Murphy, who have really thought about things like swing plane, launch angle, and are particularly familiar with it. But as you note, Justin Smoke does not seem to fit into this category as easily as some of them.
Right. He described his breakout, his turnaround, a little differently. He said what he really did was stay more within himself last season. He said earlier in his career, he felt he had to try to generate power, maybe try to cheat on timing and certain pitches to generate that power. And what he said last year is he tried to just more hit for contact, make better contact, think about contact first. And I don't think it's just him trying to put words to something that he doesn't even understand. I mean, there appears to be, if you look at his out-of-zone contact rate, the previous three seasons, that rate had all been between 51 and 53%. Last season, it jumped up to 67%. And his WOBA on those out-of-zone pitches, his weighted on base average, had increased from up to 296 from the 273 mark. So he was making better contact on all a variety of pitches. Curveballs, he was much better against last year. Pulling up his numbers here. For his career, he was a 136 hitter, slugging 233 against curveballs. Last season, he hit 265 against curveballs and slugged 449 against the pitch. Smoke said earlier in his career, he was getting beat on the fastball and he's getting out in front of off-speed. He reversed that last year. He was better at combating breaking stuff and off-speed stuff, and he was combating the fastball better. So it's less of a mechanical approach for Smoke, I believe, and more of a, as he explains it, more of a philosophical change.
Yeah, or maybe less of a a physical change and more of a mental one, I suppose, a strategic one almost.
More with less, essentially, to make it as simple
actually,
as possible.
I noted also that he last year he also recorded a career low in terms of pull percentage as well, which would seem to fit in with this sort of narrative thread, not one that you've constructed, but one you've reported from Smoke himself, which is a sort of a willingness to, I mean, well, I guess you hear a hitter say this, something like that, to hit the ball where it's pitched is one way it's explained. But you include some video in your posts you include a number of cases of Smoke going the other way, essentially.
Yeah, I'd be remiss to say, he also cut his strikeout rate by 12 points while he hit 38 home runs, which is a career best. Now, if you're ever going to the idea of trading contact for power, it would really work if the ball's, you know, juiced. It would make a lot of sense to try to get more balls in play. So
I suppose, though, there are players, right, who maybe are physically impressive enough, physically talented enough, have enough power naturally, that sometimes the attempt to hit the ball hard might be counterproductive, perhaps is one way of characterizing it. I don't know to what degree that's substantiated by facts, Travis, but it seems like it makes sense, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a great Smoke quote, right? He says, earlier in his career, he was, you know, he's launching all these home runs at batting practice, and he says, it looks cool, it looks great, and then in games, it's a total opposite. He said, it's trying to get back to being a hitter first. The power is there. It's a matter of squaring it up. So he had enough natural power. He didn't need to add power. And I think he was maybe doing that for multiple years at the major league level, as he claims. And, you know, I think this is important if you're a Blue Jays fan, because if he's found a new level of performance where he's a potential 40 home run guy with a below league average strikeout rate and above average walk rate, you know, it's a very good offensive player. That's a 32% above league average offensive player. And if that's what he is, that's a great find by the front office. And in a division where there's going to be a lot of slugging and a run scoring environment where you really need to crush to be above average, it looks like this could be a great find for the Blue Jays.
You know, it made me think of Freddie Freeman a little bit when you mentioned the change and also just the natural power. Eno Saris wrote for Fangraphs last year a piece on Freddie Freeman's weird batting practice, right? And Freeman said that during batting practice, he's actually not trying to launch home runs at all. He's actually trying to hit liners to the shortstop. Not because that's what he wants to do in games, but much like the way one might use a donut to sort of, you know, to over-pronounce the weight of the bat, he essentially is attempting to overemphasize the importance of hitting the ball a particular way so that when he settles into his actual game routine, his approach at the plate, that he has that thought is in his head and that instinct is in his head. So he sort of counterbalances what might be, you know, some of his instincts, which if they were left unchecked, might create an imbalanced approach. So I almost wonder if this is purely speculation, and it's an advantage for me because it's a point that cannot be confirmed or denied. But there is a sense that maybe this attempt to overcompensate or to think about hitting the ball the other way is actually unlock something that's fundamentally important about it. In this case, Justin Smoak's abilities as a hitter. What do you think about that thesis?
I think there could be something to it.
Could be something to it. I'm very glad we don't have to substantiate it.
I mean, anyways, Smoak seems to think there's something to it, right? I mean, this is not quite the same as what Freddie Freeman is doing, but this is a mental adjustment, not a physical one.
Right. And as close to Freddie Freeman in terms of production as he's ever been. So there's that too. I want to ask you about not a Toronto Blue Jay as well, but another player with whom you've spoken, and a Canadian-born player, and that's Joey Votto. Joey Votto from Toronto, of course. You recently spoke with him about the effects of age, essentially. Joey Votto, of course, he's well into his 30s at this point, and yet he produced what last year might be considered his best offensive season. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I think it was his second best by weighted runs created plus.
Right.
But
right.
A very good, one of his best seasons, I think.
One of his best seasons at age 33. He's now in the middle, you know, this is going to be his age 34 season. But this sort of mid 30-year-old interval in a player's career is not typically the one during which he's likely to begin producing the best seasons of his career. And yet, two of the last three have been the best seasons of his career. Votto's interesting. Obviously, he's very willing to experiment, which perhaps has allowed him to adapt and change and compensate for whatever he's lost in the way of physical skill. However, I think that what he has talked to you about might have some relevance here, because the Jays are relying this year on three players who are definitively in their 30s, and that is third baseman Josh Donaldson, shortstop Troy Tulowitzki, of course, and then catcher, as you noted, player with whom you had some sort of relationship in Pittsburgh, Russell Martin. Could you share what you got out of Votto from that conversation, and I guess what he does and does not know about aging, and I suppose what strategies he has or does not have for combating the effects of age?
Yeah, Votto. So I approached Votto a couple weeks ago in Arizona, and I was just curious to get his thoughts on aging and hitting, since he seemed to be defying the age curve. And I asked him about that, and he said, "Well, I might be declining." And I said, "Really? You just had this amazing year, and you're only Mike over the last 3 years. Only Mike Trout has been a better offensive player by, you know, the key weighted runs created plus mark we use." But his point was he might be in physical decline, which is usually what we associate decline with in sports and life in general. But he felt he had probably found some ways to mitigate it. And I think most famously, we've seen Votto choke up on the bat quite dramatically, and that it was really a thing last season, I believe. And just hit, you know, hit the wisdom he has, he's a very analytical, thoughtful hitter. He's changed his batted ball profile a little bit, in part because of the infield shifts he's seen. So he's constantly tinkering, thinking, trying to adjust, thinking about what the pitcher's trying to do to him. So there's maybe something to be said for intelligent players willing to experiment and use all the resources and curiosity at their disposal to better combat the age curve. But yeah, it's also quite possible Votto's just a freak of nature and an outlier that you shouldn't expect most 33-year-olds to perform that way. But yeah, and the vision part is interesting, because there's this New York Times piece that I thought was interesting a couple of months ago, that was the thesis was why are certain champions getting older in a number of sports, but hitting in baseball seem to be an exception because of the limits of visual acuity, they said, which starts to decline at age 29. And I think that means going beyond what your eye chart test is, the signals being sent to react from the brain to what it gathers from the eyes and all that sort of thing. So,
yeah, I think our brains begin deteriorating at a kind of an alarmingly early age, don't they?
Right. So I think like 25. it's probably somewhat evident listening to us that yes, that is exactly what's happening. But yeah, so he's defined a lot of things, and I was also curious, you know, with velocity increasing, shouldn't it be even more difficult to age as a hitter nowadays? As average fastball velocity has increased every year since there's been pitch tracking technology measuring it, and Votto felt that the increase hadn't been so dramatic as yet to really alter hitting performance.
Now you spoke with Jose Bautista roughly a year ago. I think you spoke with him last year in Dunedin or some point near Dunedin.
Yes, on a similar subject, because Bautista is very much on record believing that baseball player hitters in particular could beat the aging curves that have been published in, you know, Fangraphs and elsewhere and been used by front offices to make decisions on players. And he felt through better diet, the eye work he does, I'm really not sure what it is exactly, but all the practices he's doing, he felt he could age a little better than what was expected.
And now, obviously, a single year is not a sufficient sample to, you know, to be able to confirm or reject his hypothesis. However, I'm sure it is, you know, I mean, it was for Jose Bautista, it's important because he did not play particularly well last year, despite, as you noted, having taken what you'd have to think would be very logical precautions against age and age-related decline.
Right. Yeah, I think Bautista's experience is what we should usually expect from the older player. And the tough thing about asking, you know, comparing anyone to Votto is he has unusual gifts, whether they be mental or physical or however you want to credit them. He's just an elite, elite offensive performer. So to use him as an outlier is a bit, I don't know, perhaps it can be instructive, but it's also unfair. And I think Bautista's story, the idea that more players are going to warp age curves in the near future is probably not very realistic.
Yeah, and I guess it should also be noted, right? I mean, Joey Votto just completed his age 33 season. Jose Bautista's age 33 season, he was worth over 6 wins. He was worth almost exactly what Joey Votto was worth last year.
Right. Bautista's at a steeper point in the decline.
Right.
Because and Votto is now going to be entering that period where we would expect more drop-off.
Right. Yeah, and there was, I mean, offensively, there was some drop-off for Bautista between those two, and then even more considerable between age 34 and 35. And then, of course, last year, he was, you know, for all intents and purposes, he was replacement level. You take everything together, maybe a little bit worse than that. So it's not exactly, right, as you mentioned, on the one hand, perhaps it's not good to use Joey Votto as a model for anyone. On the other hand, maybe, you know, we don't have the benefits of Joey Votto's age 34 data because he hasn't produced it yet. And so it's very possible that he's if you had asked all these questions of Joey Votto entering his age 34 season, well, what he would have produced was a season maybe not quite as strong as the one prior, but you know, more or less the same type of season, if not to the same volume. So,
but what I would worry about with an older team of position players is I know Votto kind of brushed off the velocity and stuff concerns, but you know, the average fastball by a major league starting pitcher last year is 93 miles an hour. The average bullpen fastball was 95. I suspect that will continue to increase as it has every year since 2007, 2008, since it was uniformly tracked by PitchFX. And the stuff, just as teams reduce starter innings and go to more bullpen innings where the breaking stuff seems to be sharper, the fastballs are obviously faster. I think it's tougher to, I have to believe it's more difficult to age as a position player with the type of pitching you're seeing, unless you're making adjustments and all that sort of thing. But I just think that is a concern, especially in American League East with a team like the Yankees with an overpowering bullpen, which we'll probably get to, and some other concerns. So that would be one concern I would have about the 2018 Blue Jays is not just their age, but the environment, the era in which they're aging.
Yeah, and all good points. And as you noted before I let you go, I would like to address something that we have not been able to address thus far, but is imminent now. Is it the Blue Jays' first actual collection of regular season games? And in the past, when Dave Cameron was a co-host on this program, we would do a sort of look at the week ahead. Because it's the very beginning of the season, rotation is not entirely set. I think it at least makes sense, makes perhaps more sense just to focus on the Blue Jays' first series, and it's a notable one because it's within the division against a Yankees team that was quite good last year and hasn't really shown any signs of deteriorating. In fact, they've added, for example, last year's National League MVP, which is basically it's an ideal addition. So they start off with four games. It'll be Luis Severino, Masahiro Tanaka, CeCe Sabathia, and Sonny Gray for the Yankees. It'll be J-Hap, not J-A-Hap as you want to call him, Aaron Sanchez, Marco Estrada, and Marcus Stroman for the Blue Jays. How about some general thoughts on this Yankees club, at least to begin with?
They're pretty terrifying, right? I think they're a good bet to set a new team home run record this year with health. And I've just recently constructed written on Fangraph's top 15 bullpen rankings and the positional power rankings. And the Yankees are far ahead the number one bullpen, according to our projections. And last year they had, I think, four relievers with a strikeout rate of 37% or better, which is just really crazy.
Right. I mean, there are certain eras in which no pitcher, I mean, for decades upon decades, no one would ever record a 37% strikeout rate.
And they had four of them. They set an all-time record in bullpen strikeout rate. There were a total last year as a bullpen group, I think was the second highest of all time behind the Dodgers. So as I think Brian Cashman, the Yankees GM, has done a pretty good job in riding the games, getting ahead of the game's trends, building a super pen. He's built the best. He's added power. The Yankees are going to, it's a home run era, and they're arguably going to be the best home run team. They have a lot of velocity. They have a lot of spin. I think they're the favorites in the AL East, and they, you know, they have a lot of talent coming. So I love the Blue Jays, the top of the Blue Jays system too, but the Yankees look like they're going to be a force to be reckoned with for a while, I think. And it's going to be a really fascinating opening series. And the clubs meet 19 times this year. There should be some fun baseball. But yeah, they're a tough out. They're a tough out. It's a strength of schedule. I think David Appelman shared the other day on Twitter our strength of schedule ratings, and the Blue Jays have the toughest strength of schedule in baseball as we forecast it to open the season. So it's and the Yankees
right, that's
are
based
the Yankees
are off of aggregate projected winning percentages of the opponents they're going to face.
But it seems, I believe that, because I think they're in a tough division, and the Yankees, Red Sox are a big part of that. Rays, you know, they're not awful. We'll see about the Orioles, but yeah, it's a tough schedule.
Yeah, I mean, just a projected batting average, just sort of generic, would be Brett Gardner, and then Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, and Gary Sanchez. Now, Judge, of course, was fantastic last year, hit 50 home runs. Stanton, as I noted, I mean, Stanton has been a known quantity for some time, but had kind of the season upon which people had dreamed last year. And Gary Sanchez, I did not necessarily realize this simply because maybe it was lost with, you know, the attention given to Aaron Judge. Gary Sanchez is worth over four wins last year as well. And he's a fantastic power hitter in his own right. It's a frightening lineup. And, yeah, you know, they have, of course, Didi Gregorius has had some pretty fantastic power seasons since he arrived in New York. It was not necessarily something that was precedented. It would strike me now, Luis Severino is going to be making the opening day start. It would seem to me that if there was a weakness to the club, it would be the question marks after Luis Severino. In this particular case, we'd see Tanaka, Sabathia, and Gray. Obviously, all of them have been, I think you could say all of them have been elite in one way or another at some points, but there have to be question marks there. I mean, do you think of the Yankees rotation as maybe the least certain part of the club?
I think that's fair, and the Yankees were in on the Gerrit Cole sweepstakes this offseason, I believe. I think it was reported they'd offered Clint Frazier as part of a package. And if it really is a problem for the Yankees, they have the prospect resources to go address it as they did with the Sonny Gray trade. And it's still not an awful rotation. I mean, Severino could be a Cy Young winner. He's one of the great young arms in the game. And that bullpen makes rotation a bit less of an issue when they have that dominant depth to go to in the mid innings, if needed. So I do think it's one of the question marks. It's one of the vulnerabilities.
Yeah, actually, I was thinking that while you were mentioning the quality of that of the bullpen is that something where, like we've seen with other teams, certainly during the playoffs, is it a situation where we're likely to see those players utilized in the earlier innings?
Yeah, I think the Yankees, they're probably not going to care in a postseason series. Well, I'll be curious to see how much the postseason influences this regular season, because we saw bullpens accounted for 46% of innings in the postseason last year, which is up from 38% in the regular season, which is a record, and which continues. Bullpens continue to set a new usage record every season, it seems. Are we going to see that become take an even greater step this year? And the Yankees would be in a prime position to do that, should they choose. Though you also run the risk of burning out arguably your most dominant positional group on your team. So it'll be interesting to see how they use it. I do think it makes a rotation less of a problematic spot for them.
So the point is that the Blue Jays first year, I mean, there's always a temptation to extract something more meaningful, but they will be looking at one of the very top teams in the American League at this point. And a team that, because the two share a division, will represent an impediment to their own postseason hopes. Isn't that right?
We painted a pretty bleak picture, Carson.
It's a bit dark to start things off, but then they get to face the White Sox, who, for whatever their virtues, probably winning in 2018 is not among them, or winning many games.
I think that's fair.
But Travis, we're already past the 30-minute mark. I've kept you far longer than I ever suggested I would. So I would like to thank you for participating in the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast.
Thanks for having me.
All right. That has been Travis Sawchuk, wonderful contributor to Fangraphs.com. I'm Carson Cistulli, and this has been the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast.